B-Pod Studios.
It's time now for the Gargano and Martinez Midday Show with Anthony Gargano and Jason Martinez. It starts now.
Outright tonight.
I'll hit an old man in public.
You're already contributing, Pat Egan. I love it. It is the Midday Show. Anthony off on this football Friday, this baseball Friday, dare I say. Andrew in for Anthony. Pat in for Andrew. Jason in for Jason. Oh, what a night last night. I love, you know, Twitter last night was so fun. I enjoyed it so much. I didn't get involved in a lot of back and forth, but I loved all the tweets that I got at one point demanding that everybody apologize to me, and then at another point calling me a total idiot because they come back and win that game in dramatic fashion. Let me say this. It was awesome. What Bryce Harper did is exactly why you signed him. You want those electric moments. And he jacked it into the upper deck for a great, huge come-from-behind win. And that's the kind of win, Andrew, that can start to spark a team. I'm not saying it's going to, but it's a big win to complete a sweep over the Cubs and keep the momentum going. Now, three straight, two since Charlie's been in the dugout. It was a great win. I can't deny that it was a great win.
Well, that's the other thing. It's now going back to what I said yesterday. You get another win, and you get another win here and there, and all of a sudden, maybe they start believing in the Charlie Manuel thing. Mm-hmm. Even though Charlie may not...
It becomes a thing.
He may not have said a damn thing to him.
No.
Right? It may just be his presence in there, and then all of a sudden, they're like, you know what? Let's just go back to the way we played baseball when we were growing up. No launch angles, no analytics. Let's just play baseball. And then all of a sudden, they're like... Oh, this is actually working out. And all of a sudden, mentally, everything's clear, and all they're going to do is hit the baseball, and that's it.
Yep. I said this yesterday, too. Maybe just giving the fan base a body for the failures releases the pressure going forward.
Right.
Look, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's any of those things, if it's just baseball, and sometimes you hit for a couple of games, sometimes you don't. I don't know. But what I know is that the game last night, the result the last two nights, has been tremendous. And last night was electric because they were down and out in that game. They're down 5-0 at one point. And we've seen them wave the white flag earlier this season. They didn't wave the white flag last night.
No, it was, quite frankly, I was there the whole game. It was boring. It was boring through those first seven innings. And they finally got a run in the eighth inning. And the ninth inning was obviously spectacular. I was in right field, so the home run went above my head. So that was pretty cool. But, yeah, it was boring last night, and I saw those tweets, too, saying, are you going to apologize to Jason?
Yeah.
I'm like, let's wait and see what the game does. Let's see what happens in the eighth and ninth inning, because Charlie still has some magic.
Well, he sprinkled the fairy dust, I guess, at the right. I'm sure the chants were going, weren't they?
Oh, all night last night.
Well, look, the result is tremendous. I'm not changing my expectations yet. It's still just two games since Charlie's been in the dugout. But it's really not about that. And what it is about is about a game last night that was electric. And in a long baseball season, you hope to get more of these than just a couple.
Right.
But last night's was an electric one. You know, a lot of people said, and I was seeing this on social media, this is the one of the greatest regular season wins in like 7-8 years, probably since like 2009 or 2010, somewhere around there.
Yeah, the bro was saying it since the time they won the division on the final game of the season. Yeah. One of the best regular season wins.
Yeah, it was a great win. It really was. It only means something if they are able to use it to propel them going forward. But in a capsule by itself, it was a great win last night. It really was. And to see Harper, the way he ran the bases, I know a lot of people put it out. It looked like Forrest Gump running down the driveway. He was so pumped up. And the way he ran the bases, I thought was like incredibly endearing, first of all. And second of all, you know, the celebration at home plate, the interview with Craig Murphy, all of it was just awesome.
Hugging Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, it was, pardon the pun, but a home run at every turn. So it was a great night for the Phillies last night. They totally, this is weird to say, they totally overshadowed the Eagles.
Yes.
You know, now one was a team in a wild card race. The other one's a preseason, and a preseason that means nothing. But still, they overshadowed the Eagles completely last night with the way that a game ended up breaking down.
Yeah. So I got back from the Phillies game last night and I had the preseason game DVR'd and I'm like, all right, let me watch some of this, but at least the first half.
Yeah.
And of course, Kessler goes down early. I'm like, oh, here we go. Now we're going to have to talk about not playing Carson until week one again.
Mm-hmm.
But I was bored the whole time watching it because I knew it was a preseason game and I didn't know the result. I didn't look up the score when I was at the Phillies game. Yeah. I didn't know the result, but who cares about the result?
Yeah.
But I'm like, this is not meeting anywhere near the energy level that was in Citizens Bank Park, especially in the ninth inning yesterday.
Yeah, well, innings one through eight, it was probably more energetic and interesting.
Yes.
But then when you got to that ninth inning and they set themselves up for the comeback and then Harper delivers in such a massive way. So, what does the Phillies win mean? Is it like, look, I was like the devil yesterday, and I heard Mike come on yesterday too, and because Tyrone was one of those insta reactors. Yeah, you guys are both, and a lot of people are, and I get it, and I know that it's easy to react in a positive direction when that's the desired effect. You know what I mean? Like, we all want them to do well. We want them to go on a run. And I kept citing the pitching. Yeah, the lineup is potent, and I've cited the pitching ad nauseum, that being the issue. That's still an issue. But based on two games with Charlie in the dugout, a three-game win streak, which they've done a few times this year with the three-game win streak, they haven't rattled off nine games in a row. They haven't won 12 of 13. It's not something that they've done that's extremely impressive, other than the way they've won the last two nights.
Right.
So does that warrant now changing an expectation? Look, we saw the Mets. They went on a run where I think it was like 15 games or whatever, where they were incredible.
Yep.
They lost one game, and they put themselves back in the mix. They jumped the Phillies in the standings for the time being at that time. And did that in New York, did that make them go, well, this is a team now that is dangerous in the playoffs? It probably did.
I think it did, but they
that's
also
a lot.
They also just lost their leadoff hitter. He's going on the injured list for a little bit, and the guy has the highest batting average in all of baseball. So remember how much the Phillies were affected by the loss of Andrew McCutchen. And
yeah.
He wasn't hitting the way Jeff McNeil in New York was hitting, but he was doing a lot of other things, getting on base, playing good outfield,
setting the table,
being that veteran leader on that team. Maybe the Mets take a step back. They've lost the last couple of games since they've lost McNeil. So maybe now all of a sudden the Phillies are figuring it out without Andrew McCutchen. It took long enough, but maybe they're starting to figure it out. And again, going back to the Charlie thing, maybe there was this tension just uplifted and all of a sudden they feel a little better, a little more loose. It wasn't great the first seven innings of that game yesterday. It wasn't.
No.
But they figured out the way to win. And what did we say?
They had five hits or something going into the ninth inning.
And what did we say earlier in the year? Those teams in 08 and 09, you never counted them out.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to compare this team to the team that won the World Series. I'm not going to, because they haven't played well enough consistently.
And they don't have the pitching staff.
No, exactly. Even though that pitching staff wasn't that great either. But
it was the worst one.
It was better than Drew Smiley and Jason Vargas, you name it. But those teams we always talked about, you could never count them out.
Yep.
And if a night like last night shows to them, the players themselves, not us, not you and me, not the fans, but to them, that they can come back no matter what the deficit is. It was 5-0 or 5-1 with one out in the ninth inning, and they found a way to come back and win. Maybe that helps them out moving forward.
Yeah, it may be exactly what they need. It could be. This is the kind of win that can propel a team for a period of time. Is it sustainable for the remaining, 39 or 41, whatever they have left, 40 games? That remains to be seen. But is that game last night going to cause people to change their expectations? Now, Mike was in the same camp I was yesterday. I was the village idiot, though, yesterday, because I just said, look, I need to see more. It's baseball. I need to see a lot. But a game last night, I do recognize it was great on its own last night, but I do concede also it is a type of win that you can gain, like, forge a new identity with. I'd say, like, to your point, that, hey, we're a team that you can't count us out in a game. Even with one out and down four runs in the ninth inning, we can still come back and win that game and sweep you in our building. So it is one of those games that you got to follow it up now in the next series, this series this weekend with the Padres. They got to continue to do those things. Even if they get down, they've got to battle. If they can do that and start to build that as an identity, then they can become a team that can get into the playoffs. And then when you have that identity of a team that never gives up and can come back from deficits, and, you know, I call it an ignorance to games that you shouldn't win. If you play with that ignorance that, you know, hey, we're down 7-2 in the eighth inning, we shouldn't win this game. But you play with an ignorance and you just keep battling and you end up coming back in some of those, then you become
the term dangerous, because you're just playing and the situation, the score, none of that matters. The 08 team, 07 team, 09, that they had that ignorance. They'd be down in the game huge, like 8-1 in the fifth inning. And they come back and win the game.
They score two runs in the 6th, two runs in the 7th, two runs in the 8th. All of a sudden, they're in it. Now, one of the identities that they have to shake is all season long, we've seen them play down to their opponent's level.
Yep.
So this Padres team's 8 games under 500. They have some nice young players on the team. They can't then all of a sudden, it can't be 3-2 ball games.
No, this is where they got to keep their foot on the gas. This has to be the point in their season. This is like the fork in the road. It's we got to decide if we're legit. And we got to go balls out the rest of the way. And we got to forge this identity. We've got to use what's happened the last couple of nights with that sweep of the Cubs and move forward and carry this all the way through. It's not asking too much to carry this all the way through September. Now, I'm not saying you're going to get 11 runs every night. You're not going to have walk-offs every night. Of course, they're going to have games and they're going to lose the games. But they got to play their best baseball from right now going forward through the rest of this regular season. Can they do it? Is you changing your expectations? 610-632-0975. I'd love to hear people's observations of what they saw in that Eagles game last night. I saw some good things last night, other than the fact that you lost another quarterback. And with the way it went down, losing Cody Kessler in that game, just a totally clean shot. The defensive end wasn't blocked at all. There is no reason, if you're not going to put your entire starting offensive line in the game, to put your $100+ million quarterback behind it.
Yeah, I'm putting Carson in bubble wrap the rest of the way.
Can't do it. You just can't do it. It makes no sense at all. If you're going to not play your starting offensive line, you cannot. It's basically malpractice to put your quarterback behind what was out there last night. And Dillard, look. Doug Peterson after the game said he wished that Cody Kessler would have changed the play, changed the protection. He didn't want to put it all on Dillard, but it was a total failure, and Kessler goes out in concussion protocol. Do they bring in another quarterback now? They probably have to.
They might have to. Yeah, you're going to have to. But I did watch a video of a former offensive lineman doing a Baldy breakdown, but it wasn't Brian Baldinger. It was a guy named Jeff Schwartz. It wasn't Dillard's fault, according to him.
It was a switch off the running back?
No, because it was empty backfield. It should have been Matt Pryor, who had a terrible preseason week one. Apparently, according to Jeff Schwartz, who I believe him more than myself because he's a former offensive lineman in the league, he says Pryor should have actually rolled out and hit that block.
Well, but that's to the point. You got guys in there that aren't your normal guys.
So there's not a ton of synergy. Don't play Carson at all.
Don't play Carson. 610-632-0975. Now, coming up today at 11:25, an A-lister will join the program. John Travolta promoting his new film. It's called The Fanatic, ironically enough. He named a movie after the radio station. He'll be in studio to talk to us about that. Yeah, yes, he is playing you. And I've also put together, off the top of my head, a list of the greatest scenes in cinema.
Oh, nice.
And I want to get some great scenes from people, because John Travolta is actually in two of the greatest scenes that I recall from cinema, both from the same movie. 610-632-0975. That is the number to get in. It is the Midday Show. Andrew in for Anthony.
Gargano and Martinez Middays.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
AM hour brought to you by Window Nation. Take advantage of Window Nation's 50% off sale on all styles of windows. Plus, make no down payment with no payments and no interest for 12 full months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. Midday Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. John Travolta will be in the studio with us, 11:25. Got a new movie coming out. It's actually, oddly enough, it's called The Fanatic. He had to promote the movie here, I guess, with the name The Fanatic.
Oh, yeah. It just all makes sense.
Yeah, his character's name is Moose. And
Kenny Moose and Goose?
That's not Kenny Moose and Goose. And the movie was actually directed by Fred Durst of Limp Bizkit fame.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So did John do it all for the nookie? You know what I'm saying?
Find out at 11:25.
Yeah, that'll be the first question, right? But he plays this disturbed, like, super fan. And, you know, we've seen movies with this premise before. But, like, he's got, like, the Pat Egan backpack on in the movie. Like, the Toy Story backpack. And it's
I'm not a stalker, though.
No, you're not. But it's...
We don't know what you do in your free time.
I go to the movies. You know exactly what I do in my free time.
Yeah, he's pretty transparent, no doubt about it. But so we'll talk to John Travolta coming up at 11:25. Also, it's my contention he's in two of the greatest scenes that off the top of my head I came up with a list in cinema. And, you know, scenes, there's always scenes in movies that either leave you affected or funny or are just like, wow, that was a great scene, really intense or... You know, like the opening of Saving Private Ryan when they stormed the beaches of the Omaha Beach and how real that was. And I don't know how real it was because I wasn't there when they actually stormed the beaches of Omaha Beach. But veterans there were saying that it was that's what it was.
It's hard to watch.
Yeah, Spielberg was able to really encapsulate what it was like to step off those boats. That's on my list. But John Travolta in one movie was in two of the greatest scenes that I recall in my lifetime of watching movies. And the one is, he's not the main guy in the scene. It's the Ezekiel 25:17 scene in Pulp Fiction. That's a tasty burger. That entire scene is phenomenal. But he is one of the main guys in the other scene from Pulp Fiction. And it's with Eric Stoltz and the adrenaline shot that he's got to give through the sternum plate. And he's got to stab. Do I stab like this? You know, with the, it's one of the great, it's so tense. And it's one of the great scenes. And I got a list here of a bunch of them. And when you call today, if you've got a great scene from a movie and it passes our test, and that's the triad, that's Pat, you, Andrew, and myself, then we'll score you a pair of tickets to FanFest coming up a week from tomorrow. All right? Are we able to do that today?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
And the beauty of that scene with the adrenaline shot is because the camera angle's facing up, so you actually feel as if you're the one that needs the adrenaline shot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's classic Tarantino, and it's just like they're just trying to figure it out. They're in a panic mode. But there's so many great scenes from movies. So if you can, I've got a bunch here, too. I'll drop some of them as we go out through the show. But if you've got a great scene and it meets our standards, then we'll hook you up with a pair of tickets to FanFest where you're going to be able to hang out with Allen Iverson. You're going to be able to hang out with Tobias Harris, Deshaun Jackson. It's going to be a great day. Tons to do. Chance to sign up for the trip for four to Disney and the NBA experience. So, again, great movie scene. You'll get to score one of those. It is a football Friday as well. We'll get into Eagles conversation. But really the big story today is Bryce Harper and the Grand Slam to win the game last night. Phillies in the ninth inning, down 5-1. And then Harper, down 5-2, delivers. They end up with the 7-5 victory last night. They sweep the Cubs. For some reason, the Cubs are just horrific on the road.
Yeah.
It's amazing how bad they are. But
and especially,
you take it.
There's a lot of Cubs fans there last night, too.
Yeah, so
they had a nice little home feel to it, and didn't work out for them.
Yeah, so great game last night, though. Very exciting, and those are the kind of games that you go, wow, this is how a team can win me over, is by exciting games like the way the one finished last night. 610-632-0975. Let's get to the phones and start with Justin in Swedesboro on the Fanatic. Hey, Justin.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are you today?
Great.
Ecstatic, man. This win, you know, pencil another one under Charlie Manuel's belt, I would say. I've been calling this week, I think twice, flipping out, ranting about the Phillies, and more so Kapler, I guess, to be specific. Honestly, I feel like we won last night despite of Kapler. I think the lineup's been... I don't even understand what he's doing with the lineup, honestly. Luckily, it's kind of fell into place of late. But, you know, I think it's not a coincidence that Manuel shows up and all of a sudden, you know, the first game, we're swinging more first pitch than we ever have, and we took advantage of Hamels, and, you know, we're successful in that sense. And then, you know, last night, not as much, obviously. It looked like another collapse, like in the Giants series. We put up 9 runs, and then the following game, I think we got held to 1 or 3 hits, one or the other. And it was looking like that last night until we got into the bullpen. And, I got to say, I was negative Nancy up until the eighth inning, probably. And, you know, once I saw what we were doing in the ninth, me and my pop were watching, and just amazing. Honestly, I don't know. I'd say the last time there was a game of that magnitude that was that epic was probably Halliday's perfect game or no-hitter in the playoffs, I think, in 2010, I think it was. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not, but I just wanted to see your take. I mean, do you guys think that Manuel's had a little bit to do with what's transpired the past two games?
Look, I think it's a combination of things. I don't think it's Charlie individually per se. I think it's the fact that they made a move, a substantial move in getting rid of the hitting coach. And what that did was
that jolted it.
Well, that assigned blame. So it took all the blame off the players and released a pressure valve. And you know the one big thing in Justin sports is this, is when you're playing with a ton of pressure and you're adding pressure, it's debilitating. So when you remove that in a way, when you remove that in a way, I think it just frees the guys' minds and go, hey, let's just start over here. Let's just go out and start swinging and have fun and let's see where it goes, knowing that the other way didn't work. And now that you didn't get the blame for it, essentially the hitting coach took the fall.
Yeah, that is true. Real quick before you guys cut me, I wanted to see, is there any way any FanFest tickets are left?
Yeah, I'll hook you up with a pair, Josh. You'll be there next Saturday. It's coming up a week from tomorrow. But I'm looking at the long-range forecast. Not that long. It's only a week away. 8 days now. And what I was seeing was like 80 degrees with like a low of 61, low humidity.
I don't want to jinx it, but we have been blessed with the weather on FanFest
every single year.
So hopefully it keeps up. Now, one of the things that is actually pretty interesting, I was watching Bryce Harper's post-game interview with the MLB Network, not with the NBC Sports Philly crew with Greg Murphy, but the MLB Network. And they asked him, like, all right, has Charlie said anything to you over the last 2 days? And he was like, no, he's been here for 2 days. He hasn't been able to talk to all of us.
Yeah.
So it goes back to it. Yeah, Charlie really probably hasn't done all that much in his 2 days. But as you mentioned, they put blame on somebody. It takes off some tension from the room. Mm-hmm. And maybe there is a feel. Maybe Charlie just goes up there and goes, hey, he's been going first pitch fastball to every batter. Like maybe just simple stuff like that that they can then relate to when they go up to the plate and they're looking for first pitch fastball and they attack.
Yeah. And it's not a situation where Charlie's taking these guys down into the cage and the stadium and changing their entire fundamental swing. There's no time to do that. That's not only probably hasn't happened with a single player, but that is not going to happen with Flair. Not in season. You can't reconstruct a swing at this point in the season completely, but you can talk about approach. You can talk about tendencies, and you can talk. The one thing I think that Charlie can do the best that he can articulate to players and deliver in a way is to free the mind.
Right.
Is to kind of, because he's such a laid back guy. So it's easy for him to loosen you up and just give you little pearls of wisdom because he's got so much credibility and just free your mind. He's not going to go up there and tangle your brain. He's just going to say a couple things that untangle your brain.
Yeah, it's not like when you've been watching the last two nights because he's been on the bench the last two nights that guys have different batting stances. Like, it's not, they're not making really many changes.
Yeah, nobody's choking up on the bat.
But it is something to point out that they have been more aggressive early in counts, especially last night. I mean, Darvish went seven innings because he hadn't reached 100 pitches yet. Whereas
they didn't work him.
Whereas game one against Quintana, he only went six innings. He struck out 14, but he only went six innings because he was over 100 pitches already. So maybe the approach is different. Swing earlier in the count. Maybe Charlie just freed the mind, and maybe that's what's helping so far.
Yeah, maybe it's just, hey, you're not going to get ridiculed coming back to the dugout because of your launch angle.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's just, hey, guys, just go up and let your instincts take over. Don't worry about any of that other stuff.
You keep on saying that it's not your fault. They put the blame on John Maley making that decision. I'm just thinking of Goodwill Hunting when Robin Williams just came up. It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
It's not your
it's
fault.
It's not your fault. And he just beats it into his head, into Matt Damon's head in the movie. And it was funny because I'm watching, I see the Harper home run live last night, and I'm watching, I can't stop watching it over and over again. Kruk's reaction was phenomenal. But boy, the launch angle on that bat, on that home run, that was a John Maley home run.
Get out of here.
That was all, Egan, you saw the launch angle on that bat. That was like 18 degrees.
Yeah, that was, John Maley would have been proud. John Maley's sitting in a bar, just drinking his sorrows away. He's telling some soul that was me. I did that.
Yeah, they fired me. But you know why that ball went out? My launch angle. The way I was teaching.
Learned that from me.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, though. I think Harper's shoes are still sitting at home plate because he came at him on that swing. I mean, he just... He threw everything he had into that, and he's got a violent swing already.
Yes,
but it would, and that's why you got the reaction from Kruk, because Kruk knew as the way he swung, if he touched the ball, there was no way it was staying in the park, and he just destroyed it.
Such an absolute moonshot. Oh, it's great.
It was so high, like you were there, it went over your head.
Oh yeah, and I'm watching. I'm like, I don't see it anymore, but I know it's fair. And all of a sudden, the place just went nuts.
Oh my goodness! Let's go to Reed in Charlotte, charter chapter member on the Fanatic. What's up, Reed?
What's up, fellas?
How you feeling?
Man, I'm great, man. How are you?
Great.
All right, cool. A couple of things real quick. Eagles, really quick. Watch 57, Edwards. You know, so I keep hearing that preseason football doesn't mean anything. I totally disagree with that philosophy. And I hear it, you know, on every show. Hey, preseason football don't mean nothing. It means something to those guys that aren't on a team yet. A guy like Edwards, undrafted rookie free agent, had a good college career.
Yeah, we're talking in the grand scheme of things, Reed, more on a broad scale. But, of course, there's guys trying to, you know, forge a career, try and open up some eyes, whether it's here to make this team or open up somebody else's eyes if he gets cut. I get it.
Yeah,
get
I mean,
that.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough football to watch, you know, sometimes, but I watch it for the guys that you're not even looking for. So I think last night, Edwards, flash. He was good in college, too. I watched Wisconsin a lot the last couple of years.
Yep.
The only reason he didn't get drafted because of his 40 time, and he doesn't have the perfect size, but he's around the ball. So watch Edwards. He's going to make the team, and I think he's going to some playing time. So there's some good things. I think my lot is getting better at tackle, and Dillard played well. So there were some good things last night. From a baseball standpoint, I was watching that game as well at the same time as a bar. You know, Harper hit the home run, but we got to remember a lot of people did things after the eighth inning to set it up like that.
Hey, Bamboo Brad. Brad had a base hit RBI single.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we got to look at that. You know, I mean, he's going to get the credit, but, you know.
No, they had to set the stage for him, too. You're right.
Yeah, they had to fill the bases. You know, so, I mean, I know he did a great job knocking it out, but, you know, Hoskins took one on the hand and stayed in the game. And, you know, I mean, they just played a good inning and a half, and that's all it took, you know, that game. So, but hey, man, my last thing with the scene, classic scene, best shootout scene ever was on Heat.
In Heat? I have a different one from Heat. But that is a good one. I have the diner scene from Heat. The conversation.
Scene? Pacino
and De Niro together.
Yeah. That was a good one, too.
So, yeah, it's a good one, Reed.
Yeah.
All right, brother.
Okay,
brother. All right, man. All right, Reed's already going to be at FanFest. Steve tweets in and says, they said it was actually a 40-degree launch angle and the ball 113 miles per hour off the bat. Wow, that's exit velocity. I love all these terms.
So do we have to send a thank you card to John Malley for that one?
Yeah. No, Bryce should sign that ball, get it from the fan in the stands, and send it to John Malley.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Say, don't let the door hit you.
Yeah.
He hugged Charlie afterward.
So
I'll jangle this.
So I was saying last night how, like, I was getting this barrage of totally different tweets within minutes of each other.
Oh, yeah, the seventh inning tweets compared to the ninth inning tweets.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah, it was... Oh, my God. It looks like Charlie's the hitting coach for the Cubs, blah, blah, blah. So after the game, and it was a great win. I just tweeted, I said, great win for the Phillies, and Harper is officially on fire. And he's been great lately. I'm not sure what the home run numbers are. It was 6 in the last 11 games going into yesterday, right? So 7 now in his last 12 games.
Yeah.
Grand slam, walk-off, the whole thing. So Phil tweets me and goes, $330 million. This isn't called on fire. It's called what he's paid $330 million to do.
Oh, come on.
He goes, I guess he was on fire earlier in the game with the 2 strikeouts. Typical post of a Philadelphia fan. Great/sucks. No in between. I read that and I go, man, that, like, Phil, you're actually like the stereotypical Philadelphia fan. Like, harping on the strikeouts. And my response is really simple. Like, baseball is one of those sports where you fail way more than you succeed. But when you succeed and you drive in 4 runs and walk off a game for a sweep against the Cubs, you're not worried about 2 strikeouts earlier in the game,
that,
dude.
That that tweeter probably said he didn't want Bryce Harper because no player should deserve that kind of money.
Yeah.
And then when he was playing poorly, he was probably going, see, you shouldn't have paid him that kind of money. Yeah. This was a mistake. And now that he's doing well, it's, well, he should have been doing this all along.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the guy who'd rather be right than his team actually succeed and him
be
wrong.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an idiot. Delete your account.
Thank you.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, you need a little vitriol today. You've been up early today. You went. What time did you go to bed?
2:30.
I knew it.
What time did you get a text to come in?
5:30. But I didn't see the text till 6.
And you got up. I'm amazed your phone was on. 610-632-0975. That is the number. It is the Midday Show. Andrew in for Anthony on this Football Friday. It is a Baseball Friday as well. There's no denying it. The Phillies right now, there's some buzz. There's buzz going on about the Phillies.
It should be back. I mean, it really should be back at this point because I know a lot of people jumped off. I do the baseball show, so I know the tone, right?
Yeah, like you can feel it.
The conversations that I have on a weekly basis, and when you go back to that series where they swept the Mets in 4 games, it was like split. A lot of people were saying, oh, well, it's just the Mets.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people were also saying, all right, this is where they start heating up because this is the lineup that we expected. And then they start losing to the Braves, and then they lose to the Nationals. And then it's like the last 2 weeks have been not apathy, but just vitriol toward the front office, toward Gabe Kapler, toward John Maley.
Which necessitated the change.
Yes, and now this week it's like, okay, let's see them do it again. Let's see them do it again. Now they got 3 straight wins, and I'm expecting a party all day today, not just the baseball show tonight, which will happen again at 6 o'clock with yours truly, but the rest of this midday show throughout Mike's show today, I'm expecting celebration.
Yeah, well, it was an exciting, the 11 runs 2 nights ago and the way the game finished out last night with a walk-off grand slam. I mean, that is when you're a kid, you know, you're in the backyard, it's the walk-off grand slam.
You imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing you say. Or it's the great play, the diving shortstop to throw the guy out for the final out of the World Series, or jumping and catching the ball as it's over the fence.
Yes.
Those are like the three chalk things you did as a kid. Oh, look, I robbed the home run to win the game, win the World Series. The walk-off grand slam is as cool as it gets. 610-632-0975. That is the number to get in. And great movie scenes. Score you tickets to FanFest a week from tomorrow. 610-632-0975. Midday Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Gargano and Martinez Middays.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
.975 The Fanatic.
With the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way up there, and way out of here! Second deck walk-off home run! Grand slam, Bryce Harper! Wow!
Wow is right. What a... As soon as it came off the bat, John Kruk.
Oh my God!
Yeah, that Kruk, oh my God, it's great.
That's the first time he's been excited about a Phillies game in I don't know how long.
Probably since he played.
Well, yeah. You saw how miserable he was during the, when they were doing it right behind the dugout, the outdoor broadcast on Wednesday.
He's been miserable since he came back. This is the first time he actually had a smile on his face.
Well, yeah.
But that day in particular, because all the fans are around, he's just sitting there. I think he even said, like, we look like D-bags out here.
He's a curmudgeon.
Well, I think it was the first walk-off grand slam since he hit one.
No.
There was another walk-off grand slam?
That John Mayberry Jr.
Oh, okay.
John Mayberry Jr.
And it scored Eric Kratz.
Yes.
Former Godshall Turkey Bacon spokesman Eric Kratz.
Oh, my goodness. Unbelievable. 610-632-0975. John Travolta going to join us at 11:25, star of the new movie, The Fanatic. Isn't it? It's just kind of weird that it's The Fanatic and actually spelled the exact same way.
Well, how else would you spell it?
Well, no, I mean, you could go on PH, like The Philly Fanatic. But then again, that company would have sued him and tried to shut the movie down.
Yes, yeah, we already got that going on now.
He plays Joe Stazek in the movie. I was listening to you guys last night, And Stazak, what, did he like put an extra phone line on the air or something, caused all kinds of problems?
He says he didn't, but he totally did.
Oh,
yeah. All of a sudden there's feedback and I'm like, we gotta go another break. So we called down engineering and Rodney rushed down here and fixed it pretty quickly. But
I don't know, Deeks,
I didn't even touch anything. I don't know what you're talking about here.
Did he drop the famous late at the end of the show?
Absolutely he did, yeah.
Graf and Media is on the Fanatic. Graf.
John Mayberry Jr. and Eric Kratz. Holy crap. Thank God we don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah, Kruk was the last left-handed hitter. They asked him about it in the post game, and he said, that's about the only thing me and Bryce Harper have in common.
I do love how much of a curmudgeon he is, but the Bryce Harper at bat in general was just fantastic. The fact that he was swinging right off the rip, fouled off the first two pitches, took the second, I think the third, and fouled off the fourth, and then smoked the fifth. So, I mean, look, man, if he's going to be aggressive, that's all that's needed. And honestly, I don't think Charlie Manuel actually says anything, which is the reason why these guys hit. I think the fact that he's kind of just like, yo, go be aggressive at the plate and hit the ball, like, I think that's all they really need. I don't know. I feel like less is more in baseball.
Well, yes, a lot of times it is. It free, because you need to free the mind. They still, the hardest thing to do in sports is to hit a baseball, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to.
There's no denying that.
You can't. You have to be as minimally impaired by your brain than anything else. You have to just let instincts take over because you have no time to think. And with how good the pitching is nowadays, and the fact that the sport, you fail way more than you succeed, it's that I think that preys on your brain as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing that I think is awesome, too, and this is beside that point, like looking at Charlie Manuel sitting on the bench wearing his Phillies jersey is probably the greatest form of nostalgia I've had in a very long time. And I truly, honestly hope that this works out. And I hope that Gabe Kapler takes this incredibly seriously. And then at the beginning of next season, he looks at all of us and says, yeah, I'm going to bring Charlie Manuel back as my hitting coach. Because Charlie, I don't think, actually wants to be a general manager. And honestly, in all, I think that Charlie Manuel wants to be a hitting coach because he loves to hit. He loves hitting.
He loves talking hitting, too.
Yeah, there's a lot less responsibility that comes with it. And he's like, hey, man, I'll just come in, I'll teach hitting. And, you know, he's been a special advisor for a while.
Yeah, when he spoke about it, he said it doesn't take much to put a bat on a tee or a ball on a tee and then watch what the guys do.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, the thing, I think he would be, Jason, let me ask you something, and I'm sorry this is taking a little time. Do you think that it would benefit Gabe Kapler to have an individual like Charlie Manuel on the bench as a mentor in a fashion that allows him to think freely, but also gives him the ability to say, yo, like, be critical of some of these choices? Because let's be real, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl with guys who didn't always say yes. I feel like part of the problem is that Dave Kapler had an entire team around him that said yes about everything.
And they were beholden. It's a great point, Graf, because, and thanks for the call. I think that when you're a first-time manager, a first-time coach, having somebody who's been through the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs of a season and preparation and strategy in situations and been there, done that, seen it, and had success, I think can be a tremendous asset if and only if the manager is not threatened by that guy and it's conversational. It can't believe, dude, you can't do this.
Yeah, if he's willing to listen.
Yeah, and use him as a resource and not feel threatened by him, then absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's imperative.
Think about it. Chris Young, the pitching coach, first-time pitching coach. John Malley was a hitting coach in a previous, you know, for some previous organizations, but never really has been that successful. So you got a first-time pitching coach, a not-so-successful hitting coach to start the year. Matt Klentak's a first-time general manager. Yeah. You got a lot of first-timers alongside Gabe Kapler, who is learning on the job.
Yeah. So to have a veteran guy in there that's had success at the big league level and doesn't upset the apple cart with his personality, and clearly Charlie doesn't do that.
No.
I mean, he's just a really likable guy in the clubhouse when he's around, talking to players, talking to coaches, talking to the front office. He's a resource, which is why I believe that the move was made, because he spent time with John Middleton, and Middleton's like, this guy's got a lot of tremendous knowledge. Let's tap it further from just being an advisor.
Right.
Now, they've said it's only for the remainder of the season. Klentak was really clear about that in that press conference. We'll see if it goes beyond this season or not. As far as like making him the manager, no. Look, Charlie has said he doesn't want to be the manager, and I believe him. He is 75 years old. I don't think he wants the ag that goes along with that, especially after accomplishing what he accomplished here.
Mm-hmm.
But being a hitting coach beyond this year, I don't know if that's in the cards or not for him. I really don't. But what I know is that if Gabe Kapler views it the right way, his presence, and uses him as a resource, he can be a tremendous, he can benefit from it.
Yeah, and something that stood out to me yesterday, I don't know if maybe Charlie Manuel had some influence on the lineup yesterday. You looked at it, Hoskins led off, mm-hmm. Harper batted second, and then I forget who, Real Muto batted third, and Corey Dickerson batted fourth. So you went righty-lefty, righty-lefty.
Yeah.
I don't know if Gabe Kapler used to do that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, there that's may have been, old school Charlie keeping a pitcher off balance.
That's what I'm saying. So I wonder if Charlie even had some sort of influence on that. That could have been an old school thing. Now, I'm not going to give Charlie all that credit. Gabe could have done that too.
Gabe's but it could have been a simple conversation.
Guy. Yeah, and I wonder if he said, hey, you know, Gabe, maybe you should flip these two guys so they can't just bring in a lefty to face two guys in a row.
Yeah.
Now, then again, Charlie had Utley and Howard back-to-back a lot, and that's what killed him at points when they would bring in a lefty that would get them out. But maybe Charlie had some influence on that as well.
Yeah, and again, to the point, I think it's really important that, you know, for a guy like Gabe, Charlie's not a divisive guy.
Right.
And he's not a guy that's going to divide the clubhouse, and the players are going to be like, we got to have Charlie. Let's get this other guy out of here. That's just, dude, players like Gabe, I don't know. I think that when things are going well, his idiosyncrasies can be endearing. When they're not going well, they can be annoying. So as long as things are going well in this current construction with Charlie in that clubhouse, then I think the difference in the way the two men carry themselves can be a positive.
I wonder who those players are talking to. Like, hey, are they going to Gabe or are they going to Charlie?
Well, I think it's probably a
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.